My name is Billy Joe Padden. This is the Mayo News Football Podcast. We're 2 weeks out from the first National League game against Down. And today I'm lucky enough to have an ex-teammate of mine, Chris Barrett, here talking about his career.
Billy, good to talk. Thanks for having me on.
You must be feeling with the weather getting good. With the season only starting now, you must be regretting your decision to retire.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I've James Horne on the call list for tomorrow there just to see if there's any way. But yeah, it's amazing. Once the evenings get longer and the grass starts to smell, you can smell the fresh cut of grass. It kind of, you get the feeling of wanting to get out there and run around and kick a ball. But no, there's no going back, Billy. No going back. I'd be killed here at home anyway. So
there's plenty Mayo supporters, myself included, that felt, you know, when you announced that you were retiring, that you had much more to give. Look, everyone knows their own body better than anyone else looking from the outside. It was probably, maybe it was right time for you personally, but in terms of physically how you felt, could you have given it another year, particularly in a shortened season with the way things are looking with COVID?
Yeah, I like to think I would have, to be honest. It didn't really factor into my decision, the physical nature or my age or anything. I think I felt coming into the end of last year that I was in as good a condition as I've been in a good while, actually, and going back maybe to my late 20s, because if the lockdown gave me anything last year, it was just a chance to get out and do my own bit of preseason running, which I'd never had the chance to do before. So from February last year, and we've lived beside the park here in Clontarf and St. Anne's, and I'm literally 200 metres away from a pitch. So I just got out and started doing my own running sessions, and I think that really kind of stood to me towards the end of the year. It's not something I was able to do outside of the team setting, we'll say, in previous years. I was generally playing catch up, maybe coming back in around March time, trying to get a league match in, and then trying to get my fitness back up coming into the summertime in the championship months. But I think last year I was, come August or September when we joined back up, I was in, after playing a few games at Clontarf as well, and a fairly a robust Dublin championship. Like, it was, I think I was well prepared. So no, thankfully, I guess it's a good thing to say that it wasn't the body that led to me retiring. And I know a lot of people aren't that lucky and they have to step away, maybe not on their own terms. But I feel good, and I'd like my the pride in me thinks I could do another year or two, but just, yeah, personal reasons, it just doesn't, it wasn't going to work any longer. So yeah.
I don't think you're the only one that thought you had more left in you. I suppose it's interesting, looking from the outside in, I was interested to see what players felt like in terms of the shortened season. And it sounds like you enjoyed it.
I did. I really did. And even, I guess, it was not only the shortened season, but I guess the one thing about the COVID is it wasn't, I guess, the whole camaraderie and the team, you know, the team nature of it was definitely reduced, in that you arrived at training and maybe you were out on the pitch 15 minutes after arriving at training, which in itself was a change for us, because, you know, from, you know, maybe 2012, 2013 onwards, when the change in the SNC and the view of how you wanted to warm it up started, like, I mean, it was nearly a race to get to the dressing room first. And there were some people there an hour and a half for training, including myself sometimes, if you're driving down from Dublin, because you thought the body might need that time to actually warm up. Whereas last year, you know, you arrived, you got togged out, you might give yourself 15 minutes and you just did it. And you're no worse off. So between that and between, I think, as I said, the shortened season, the games every week, sure, that's, you know yourself and being a player, that's when you do. You want to be playing games. And I think it's something that kind of needs to be looked at going forward, maybe from the GAA, is to try and reduce those seasons so that you're not looking at a December or January start and potentially an August finish or September finish previously for, you know, the teams into the latter end of the championship. So it could be a platform for the way the GAA might want to go in future.
Yeah, I definitely think that my own feeling on it is that players, and even when I was playing myself, you wanted, you had no problem playing three games in a month if that was necessary. And you wanted that season condensed, because the worst thing for me was finishing a league campaign and then having 5, 6, 7 weeks, particularly in Connacht, where you'd have to wait to get into a first round of a championship. And those weeks of training, all they really were a worry, because you'd be training hard and you were just worried that you'd get hurt and miss out on the biggest day of the year.
Exactly. And I guess it's, you know, if you reduce down the amount of time you can train, it's not as if you're not worrying about the other team, you know, how much training that they're doing. So if it's reduced down and everyone's working from the same parameters, like, it's not really going to impact on, say, the quality of the games or, you know, the fitness of guys, because everyone looks after themselves so much better now. But it just, I guess it's a short, sharp season. It kind of focuses the mind, and I would say a bit more enjoyable as well.
If I can take you back to your youth, from my recollection, you're a good few years younger than me, but you played a lot of soccer early on. Was football always going to be the big draw, or at a younger age were you more interested in playing soccer? I remember you being very good.
Yeah, we had a great group of lads around between my age and maybe 1, 2, 3 years above. And in Balmullet at the time, it was very much soccer and Gaelic. So it was a bit strange, I guess, for a Mayo club to have that level of interest in soccer and Gaelic. And it really was that. I mean, all the guys that played soccer played Gaelic, and conversely. And there was, you know, it worked. There was no major, I don't ever remember getting too much calls from the soccer guys saying don't go training with Gaelic, or conversely with the Gaelic guys with soccer. But I didn't really think about it at an early stage. Like I played soccer in school. I didn't start playing with RS United, I think, was maybe until, was it under 16, I think. So it wasn't an early stage. But soccer was a much more relaxed, I guess, game. Like it was more so you go back and you set up the cones and you have an 8-on-8 game. Like, and it was a different level. But Once I went into the minors in 2005, so I kind of remember going for under 15 and under 16 trials and not making it, and kind of went back to the soccer then. And but once, I guess, once the minors started in 2004, 2005, that's kind of when it really, I guess, the focus shifted then, definitely. Because the lure was always there to play with Mayo, so that was the goal. So but I went back. I remember going back after, you know, my early 20s, I'd say, you finish up with Mayo and there might be a cup game or something going on with Ayrshire United, and I always enjoyed going back in a few games. It was good fun.
Like everyone else in Balmullet, really. So, Chris, the Mayo football team, and I tell this to everyone, I'm not living in the county, obviously, anymore, in Armagh, and working in Meath and Kildare in the past, that people don't understand the draw of the Mayo senior football team, and that for every kid in the county, it's the big thing to aspire to. And so you were no different in that regard.
Yeah, 100%. And I think it's like when we were growing up, I remember watching the 96 and 97 All-Ireland, like as a whatever 8 or 9 year old, and then going to some of the All-Irelands in 04 and 06. So it was always that draw. Like there was nothing else there. Like there's no rugby, there's no real soccer to aim towards. But it seems to have, you know, multiplied, I think, even over the last 10 years, because every single kid you see now has the, you know, the O'Neill's tracksuits on, be it from their club or from Mayo, and it's great to see. And it's great to have that affinity within the county with the football team. It's nearly like both Mayo is synonymous with its football team, which is maybe different to some other counties, but it's great to see, and I think it's probably only going to bode well for the future, because, you know, there's only going to be more and more talent coming through.
In those early days in Balmullet, you were always an attacking threat and maybe played a lot of your football in the half-back line. That probably has changed as your career has gone on. And how did you find that change? Because with Balmullet, you're always joining in attacks, using that ball-carrying ability, getting forward, getting scores. And even as an underage player for Mayo, that's what I recollect one of your major skills.
Yeah, I always envisaged myself as a wing back, and that's kind of what I really enjoyed. Like I started out with the underage about Muller actually playing in the forwards. But I guess I'd be lying if I said I didn't envisage myself being a wing back for Mayo going into my senior years. And, you know, I remember when John O'Mahony was involved in 2010 and kind of started to move me further and further back. I guess the immaturity kind of shone through, and I was like, I don't play cornerback, and I didn't like it playing cornerback, and I just kind of maybe, I probably had a bad attitude to it at the time as well. I'm not going to lie, but as time went on, I guess I probably put back there because I was able to do it, you know, and it is quite tough maybe to be able to play the halfback and the cornerback role, and I think it's easier to find halfbacks, not casting any aspersions on any of our halfbacks, but I think it's probably harder to get, you know, a cornerback that can, like, in a man marking job. It's not, and I think it's more so to do with the fact that when you're growing up, if you're a good defender, you're generally not put in the full back line, so you're not exposed to marking people really. So if you're a good defender, you probably know yourself, if you're a good forward, you're centre half forward or full forward. But generally the good defenders that come in at minor level are probably playing centre back for the clubs. So it's very rare you get a kind of out and out cornerback. So I guess John O'Mahony probably saw something in me and put me back there. And same with James when he came through as well. And I guess I had a talent for it. So that's kind of what stuck. But quickly I got the immaturity was knocked out of me. I was playing for Mayo and I was getting a start. So like the want to play halfback never really left, but I stomached it and I swallowed it. But it was and at the end of my year I enjoyed playing cornerback then. And you know, I enjoyed the or pull back. I enjoyed the responsibility maybe of being back there on your own, you know. And a lot of the time it was on your own. There was a lot of gaps between you and Lee or Paddy or whoever it might have been in front of you. But I enjoyed that level of responsibility and the kind of the one on one and you against me and coming off afterwards kind of having gotten the better of the man. So it's not for the faint hearted, but always kind of had visions of number five. Mm-hmm. So I kind of left the path free there for Lee Keegan, you know, but for me moving back, he never would have made it.
There was a few good number fives there as well, vying for that spot, that's for sure. Now, it's funny that I always envisaged that maybe that was a conversation that James Warren or Stephen Roach or somebody had to have with you and kind of convince you. I think maybe were you unlucky when Jono was manager that you were meant to make your debut and you got sick against Sligo? Is that the way I remember it? It could be wrong now.
But yeah, no, that was it. Yeah, I was meant to debut against Sligo, and just the day before, and I think it was something to do with anti-inflammatories. Looking back, it was my stomach just on the day before. I couldn't eat anything, and I was up all night, and it was just kind of a 24-hour thing. And I remember the day after, I'd say people were looking, what's this guy doing? Like, he didn't play for Mayo yesterday. I went out the day after and played in a Comortis match against Kiltane, came on in the second half.
Kiltane was the deciding factor there.
Exactly, yeah. So Chris Parrott, he wouldn't play against Sligo because he wanted to play against Kiltane in the championship or in the Comortis the day after, but actually went and won it that year. But
yeah, well, I might add that Comortis is in Balmullet as well, so there's a lot of pressure on you to play.
Yeah,
to play.
Exactly. So, but yeah, it's that was supposed to be my debut and then made it in the ill-fated Longford match in 2010 then, so...
That's perfectly sequenced there, because I think that was my last game. So it was,
there we go. Yeah,
it was
out with the old and in with the new.
Definitely. Just getting back to that playing in the full back line for me, because that I find that very interesting. And I always say that there's much more asked of a Mayo defender in general because of the way they want to play. Mayo want to press high up the field. They're going to leave gaps in their defence. They're going to ask even the best attacking players, defenders, whether it be Paddy Durkin, Lee Keegan, yourself, to be able to defend in one-on-one situations in wide open spaces in Croke Park. And that's difficult. Not everyone can do that. There's other counties don't feel they can do that. They play, you know, maybe one, two sweepers. Did that take some adjustment, or was there ever any opposition to that in training when you realized that this is the game plan and we have to live with it and we have to try and survive and thrive?
I don't think it was really something we had to adjust to, because that was always the way it was. I guess the pack defense kind of came in maybe, you know, 2012, 2013, 2014, when it started to become, or maybe even before, it started to become the norm. But it was never really, you know yourself, it was never really something in Mayo that we concentrated on. So, you know, when you played cornerback, that's what you were expecting. You know, you're expecting to be on your toes and the space in front of you. We did broach it at times, I guess, as defenders. It was kind of, okay, well, how can we... And I was always one for making my life as easy as possible. If I could have someone back in front of me, if I could have two back in front of me, I would have had it. But you have to counter that with, okay, well, what's the game plan here? Like, we want to press up high. We want to turn them over high up the pitch and create more opportunities to score. But I guess for me, it was always the battle. Okay, how do I try and pull someone back in front of me so that I make my life easy, essentially, and try and help out the defense versus... You know, maybe calling people to back too much so that they're stepping off and it's not what they want to do on the sideline. So it was always trying to gauge the balance. And it's a hard thing to do. Because even if that guy that's dropping back leaves his man, you know, and to go back into the full back line and come out on it, like it creates an overlap. And then that guy has to wonder, okay, when do I step up and meet him, or do I step all the way back to stand in front of Chris? Or you know, it's not the easiest position to play either. So sometimes it's just easier to tell people, you know what, go up and mark your man, rather than having to go into the detail of, okay, well, when do you drop? When do you press? You take him. No, we don't have two sweepers. We have three sweepers. So it's it would take an awful lot of time to go through that on the playing pitch. And, you know, for us, we had the talent to say, you know what, we have the defenders to do it. Let's give our forwards the ball and give them the chance to score as well as quickly as possible. So it was...
So it was just a case of being able to man up. Did you have to change your own approach, having regard for who you might be marking, whether that be Comer or Dean Rock, somebody like that? Players maybe have different physicalities, different attributes. Because to me, it always seemed that you were very aggressive. You were trying to be out in front, trying to create that turnover.
I would have changed, you know, the way you approached a player, I guess, because as you said, like, you might have the guys that are expecting the ball in high. And I loved the marking those guys because you just kind of had to stand with them and jump and have your timing well. Like, so that was the easiest one. But I guess I would have been different maybe to, if you think of Keith, you know, he's probably your typical cornerback whereby, you know, he would have stood 2 or 3 yards in front of his man and he was trying to kind of, you know, he cut off the angles before the ball came, and he kind of had his, you know, one head turned to the man and one eye at the ball, and maybe had the speed then, you know, to react as he needed. Whereas I generally didn't like to let my man get away from me at all. So I would have generally either marked, it sounds a bit counterintuitive, but maybe a little bit from behind, as in either from the side or from behind, so that I constantly had the ball and the man in front of me. And it was more about anticipation. So, you know, wherever I thought the ball was going to be kicked, I would just maybe move that split secondarily into his space, and generally try and avoid the ball being kicked. It's kind of what I tried to do. So if a lot of the time you would go through a half maybe and the ball wasn't kicked into my man, there was nothing flashy done in that. I wasn't running out in front and turning over, but that little move whereby you cut off the kick in the first instance, I think is where every defender should start, and particularly in the cornerback position. Because if you can, you know, it's rare that the man's running down the middle of the pitch and he has both sides to kick it into, because there's someone hanging out of him or there's some kind of a body in the way. So he's either coming down one of the sidelines and there's a place he can kick it to. And if you can kind of be a little bit ahead mentally, and I guess in terms of your concentration, you can maybe take that half step. And it doesn't need to be a foot race. And like, I'm, you know, I wouldn't be the fastest of the guys in there. Like, so I kind of relied on that a lot rather than maybe pace, which some of the other guys might have relied on and from an early stage. So, a little bit counterintuitive. Maybe you always think the cornerbacks or fullbacks should mark from in front. I kind of took it more, you know, have everyone in my eyes at the same time so that I could see man and ball, and then just try and be a little bit proactive as to where your position is.
The other thing, just mentally, something I think you did really well in situation. I think all the Mayo defenders were able to do it well, particularly in the full back line, is that you might have started the game as well as you would like to. Maybe your man wins the first two balls and kicks a score. But then it's that mental reaction to be able to figure it out, to have the resilience not to let your head drop, and then to have the intelligence to figure it out. Okay, well, this is what I need to do to kind of to quell this player in this instance. Was that something you spoke about, or is that just a skill you had yourself?
I don't think it was something you would have spoke about. Probably just an innate skill in the players themselves. I think we've been phenomenally lucky with the players we've had in. You know, in all positions over the last 10 years when I've been involved in Mayo, but in particular, you know, some of the defenders we have had are, you know, they're up there with some of the best defenders that have ever played. It's something that you do have to adapt to. And I even remember maybe Roscommon this year, we played against them and I was marking Cox, and, you know, the first ball they kicked in, it was kind of a looper. I was expecting it out in front and it was kind of a diagonal ball, and he ended up getting behind me, getting a mark. And I just kind of twig there. I was like, okay, he's probably not going to take it out in front. And if he takes it out in front, probably not going to try and take me on. So I kind of edged a bit further behind him from then on. So you just kind of, you do take kind of little cues like that. And rather than putting your head down and kind of thinking, oh, it's a mistake, you kind of think, well, how do I figure this out? And what does that tell me about what I should be doing from now on? So, I guess every defender needs to be able to figure out, the player that they're marking as they go, and just take the cues that they give you.
I suppose experience helps a lot in figuring those things out in a game situation. The Mayo full back line is going to look quite different over the next couple of years with yourself and Keith Higgins not involved. Hopefully Brendan Harrison is on the mend. It's going to be difficult for some of those young players. How do you think they'll be able to adapt and fill in?
I'm sure they'll adapt quite well. I guess there's you know, from last year's full back line, I think Lee is kind of in the last couple of years maybe been used as a full back. Like realistically these days, Billy, it's probably have two, in most games you play, you might have two out and out full forwards. So you're generally kind of nearly going with, you know, if you're moving with the times as a manager, it might be two fullbacks and as a kind of a Lee Keegan guy that can do the marking as well as attack. So, and the role of the traditional fullback nearly seems to have gone as well. Like it's more so, you know, the two fast full forwards that are in there. But so I guess the need for three out and out fullbacks it probably isn't there. So I think that you do have that maybe ability to convert a halfback, but it's a difficult one to transition into. And you know, Oisin was there last year and did excellently well. And you know, our ex club mate Owen O'Donoghue as well. I'm expecting Owen to make a real step up this year. Like I mean, at the end of last year, he was training really, really well. And you know, probably unlucky not to get in the squad towards the end of the year. So be interesting to see how he steps up, and hopefully we'll get a bit of game time, because I think it is all about time, because I think like you need to be exposed at the high level to those one-on-one situations. And as I said, a lot of these guys mightn't have been exposed at club level to that, as they might have been playing halfback or they might be playing midfield or, you know. So the likes of Oisin probably, you know, more so a halfback, I think, in his underage level, and probably with his club not playing in the full back line either. So, you know, he'll grow and he'll progress into the role as well, and he'll learn. But it does take time. You know, no matter how good you are as a player, kind of individually within, you know, in, as you said, if you're a halfback or a midfielder, but it does take time to kind of demold to a full back line position, I think.
I suppose Mayo supporters are wondering, they see the talent, Oisin Mullen, Tommy Conroy, you know, Ryan O'Donoghue, all these players that have kind of come onto the scene in the last year. And it's whether they can develop and get to the level that maybe yourself and Keith Higgins and Shamie O'Shea and Tom Parsons and these players that are moving on have got to. I think we've seen that they have the talent. I suppose, are you confident that they have the mentality to keep driving it on year on year and get a little bit better every year?
Yes, I think I am. Last year was there was a bit of a sea change in the people around the dressing room. Like I kind of came back in. I know they were meeting, you know, there was the Zoom meetings earlier on in the year when COVID was happening, but I kind of, you know, James, in fairness to him, let me stay out of it until I needed to come back in from a work and, I guess, personal perspective and living in Dublin. But there was quite a lot of new players in there. And down through the years, you kind of had an intuitive sense as to the young fella coming in, which one was going to actually impact and which one wasn't, because you just kind of knew there, you know, there's some guys that came in there over the years and had loads and loads of talents, but you could just say after a couple of nights, no, they're not going to cut it because they just don't have the drive, they don't have the ambition, they don't have, I guess, the dedication, yeah, and the tough to make it. And that's not coming in throwing your weight around and trying to be Mr. Big Man. It's coming in maybe listening to guys more or asking guys or keeping your head down and just playing well on the pitch. And like some of those, you know, the younger guys that were in there last year, and some guys you mightn't have even seen, you know, Jack Coyne from Ballyhaunis, real good player, Tommy and Oisin and Owen. But the level that they brought from day one was, you know, it's really high quality, but also really good guys, and they'll listen to you and they'll take direction. And, you know, I've no real concern that, you know, the Shamie O'Shea's and the Chris Barris won't be replaced pretty quickly and soon forgotten about. So, but I think it's in a real good state. And I guess it's the right man there too to kind of bring them through. So hopefully hopefully it doesn't take them too long. You know, it is a bit of a transition, but you would hope that they'd be challenging from day one, which I think they will.
You mentioned they're the right man. I think that James Horn was instrumental maybe in developing many of the players of your age and getting you to the level that you got to. I suppose, can you speak of what are the sort of things that he helped you improve on as a young player in your early 20s to get better, and how we can help those current young players to do the same?
I think a lot of it is the dressing room at the moment as well, which is a very, and not, I guess, trying to speak ourselves up there from being for 10 years, but I think those guys are coming into a dressing room that kind of demand high standards and demand that level of dedication. So I think it's a good place to learn. I think from a personal perspective, when James came in 2011, he kind of pulled me aside, and I was, you know, just simple thing, taking the ball into the tackle too much, which I was. I was the new manager coming in, wanting to impress and trying to take too much out of the ball, and he just came and said, "Look, he didn't mince his words, shall we say, about it, you know, that I needed to change, and I took that on board. And he'll do that to the young lads as well. I mean, if there's anything that they need to work on, it'll be told. You know, they're not going to let sit there and kind of and stagnate. And if they are stagnating, then they'll either be shipped out or they'll be told and they'll be given the time to prove themselves. So it's it has to be kind of that cutthroat. And I think James has the ability to do that. And they'll learn from it, and they'll learn from the guys. There's like, it's, you know, it's not as if the whole squad is gone. I mean, you've still got Aidan O'Shea, and you've still got Colin Boyle and Lee Keegan, and, you know, Paddy Durkin is not an elder generation, but he's been there for a few years, and Jermot and Stephen Cohen. I mean, there's a huge amount of experience still left there, so they'll learn from them as well, and it'll make James' job that bit easier, and that you have these guys that have been there for years and soldiering that can help the younger generation.
You've mentioned a lot of players there, and the young players included, who have to face, you know, big teams, but in particular Dublin in their future. If you're going to win in All-Ireland, that's more than likely who you're going to have to beat. We're in a really good position over a number of years to see their unique qualities. What, in your opinion, makes them so good?
Well, they've really good players, first of all. I mean, you can't, you know, the talent that they've had over the last number of years has really brought them on to the next level. But I think they're really well coached. You know, they just seem to, as a unit and as a team, they just always seem to know where they're supposed to be or what they're supposed to be doing. And, people refer to their subs bench all the time, and what they refer to is the quality coming off the bench. But I think it's more so the continuity coming off the bench. I mean, a guy comes on, you know, 20 minutes to go, and he does not miss a beat. He knows exactly what he's supposed to be doing and where he's supposed to be. So I think a lot of it probably has to go back to the managers that are there between, you know, Pat Gilroy and Jim Gavin. And I think they have to take probably a huge amount of credit for it as well, because there was talent there before, but never got to be the successful team that they are. So they were a tough team to play against, I guess. You never got the sense that they got, you know, especially towards the latter end of a match, like, they were very composed. As I said, just seemed to know what to do and when to do it, and rarely made mistakes. I think that's kind of what their main, one of their biggest attributes was, is that they made very little mistakes. And, you know, in the matches that we played against them, I think we made too many mistakes. That was kind of usually what ended up. It was a kick of the ball, and that was generally, you know, we made one or two more mistakes that they did than they did, and that's kind of what decided it.
I think as well that plenty of people say to me, oh, well, such and such a game, whether it's 2017, I'm terrible with years, but we really had them on the rack in that game. You could have done it. Me looking in, being at the games, I never felt in any of those games that Dublin were really flustered. And that includes the All-Ireland final, where they're a man down against Kerry. That composure in the last 10 minutes is remarkable in many ways. But you, out there on the field, did you ever get a feeling in any of those situations close to the end of the games that we have them here?
I guess we never had them, because they were always so close up to the end. You know, it's not a case where we were 5 points up with 10 minutes left and you're thinking, okay, let's just, you know, we have them, you know, let's, you know, we can. I don't ever remember looking up at the clock and thinking, Jesus, we're going to be running up the steps there quite soon. Like, maybe that was just because I was, you know, I generally kind of stay focused in the game and not really try and think about the final whistle too much. But they were just such close games, Billy. Like, it never really got to that stage where you're trying to think of the final whistle. And they generally went down to the final kick of the ball. Like, there was a few, like, the last couple of years, I guess, were disappointing from our perspective. You know, you can talk about staying with them for a half, and, you know, you get the clap on the back for a plate for staying with them for a half, but, like, it's half of 35 minutes, it's nothing. It's like you haven't stayed with them at all, because you lost by 5 or 6 points. But the previous years, I guess, the 17s and, you know, the 16s and 15 and 13, they were close games. Yeah, they were close games, but it was tit for tat. As I said, just came down to a couple of mistakes, I think, at the end of the day, and a bit of execution from both sides. But yeah, the last couple of years, it was disappointing, I guess, that you know, we didn't bring them to the final whistle and give ourselves a chance at that, at the death.
And is that down to their physical conditioning, can you put your finger on it being something else?
No, I don't think it was physical conditioning. I'm not sure what it was. I guess if I knew, I'd probably make a lot of money from Mayo people. Yeah, I don't think they were in, like, we were in really good shape. I mean, the athletes that we had and the strength and condition that we did and the guys we had in the backroom team. I don't know, Billy. I don't know. I think it was, as I said, if I knew what it was and I could go back in time. Yeah, they're just a really good team. Really good team, and didn't work out for us.
In terms of, we've seen teams try different things against them. You know, Mayo have played open football, pressurised them high up the field, had some success. You've seen Tyrone come along, play ultra-defensive. You've seen Kerry kind of do a bit of both, maybe, be dominant around the middle of the field. And they seem to be able to react to any game plan a team tries to impose on them. Is there anything the county hasn't tried that you could come up with? I suppose if I could come up with something, I'd be coaching, but I'm not. I'm sitting here talking to you. So I'm interested to see if there's anything. You know, a lot of people talk about, you know, playing a long ball in, they're vulnerable in the full back line. I don't believe that at all. You just give the ball away too often. What's your own views?
Yeah, so like people have, you talk about that, why don't they put the ball in high and let them fight for it? But like, it's very, very hard to put an accurate ball in high, first of all. Like, you're trying to kick a ball from 40 yards and land it in, you know, the space of 10 metres so someone can run up and catch it. I think the blueprint is there from us and from Kerry. I think it needs to be kind of a, not a man on man, but you can't detract from your attack in order to pack out the defense, because that just, like, you're not going to score enough to get through them. They're very well organized. So it's not as if, you know, I know, you know, Donegal did it, but it kind of in 2014, I think was it. And it kind of took them on the hop. They kind of played ultra defensive and then kind of got a couple of balls over the top and got a couple of scores from it. But they learned from that as well. But it's like, no one, you know, I know we never thought that, you know, we'd go out and beat them by 5 or 6 points. And like, I don't think anyone over the next few years is going to be able to do that. But I mean, if Mayo or Kerry or, you know, Donegal or Tyrone or Galway, you know, if you can go out on a day and kind of, you know, have your game plan set and your players play to the, you know, at least close to the top of their ability, you minimize the mistakes and you've just put them under pressure for 70 minutes. Like, they will make mistakes. I mean, but it's, no one has done it yet to a sufficient standard, but it is like, it's everyone has seen it's possible. I don't think you have to reinvent the wheel. It's just about executing, having your game plan right. You know, have your players in the right frame of mind and then minimizing the mistakes.
So you're not yet worried about it.
Sounds easy.
You're not yet worried about their dominance compared to all other counties, because I suppose plenty of people are.
Like, they could go on and win four more, you know, and if they go on and win one more, two or three more, and it's, you know, it's by cricket scores, then you would be getting worried. Like, it's, you know, what's to stop them from doing it? Like, they can't turn around and say, well, actually, you know what, we're winning too many here. Let's pull back. Let's rein in a little bit. Like, so it's up to everyone else to try and figure it out. And it's, you know, it's up to, it's probably two or three teams that can do it, you know?
And would you consider, like, I know we've thought of Mayo and Kerry, maybe even Donegal, but could Galway and maybe even somebody like Tyrone with McShane and McKinnon, could they get back up there to challenge?
Potentially, yeah, potentially. I mean, Galway was the start of last year, were flying, you know, they were really going well. And then lockdown happened. We played them kind of, was it the first game back last year in a league match, and they were, you know, they weren't at the races that day. You know, we played them in Salt Hill last year. It was a really tight game. I mean, that really could have gone anyway. I think at the end of it, like, there was a bit of a scramble and there was a couple of shots that Shane Walls missed that might normally have missed. And they had come into that maybe a little bit undercooked as well from not having a game previously. So I think, yeah, they could definitely, like, they've the quality, but they haven't been there for a long time either. And it's kind of tough to, I think it's tough just to all of a sudden get back up to that level and expect to be up challenging with a Kerry or Dublin and Croke Park without maybe having the experience of a few years under your belt. Like, I mean, you look back at us, it took a semi-final in 11 and a final in 12 to slowly eke your way back. But I think they have the potential to do it.
Looking back at all those games that you've mentioned, and do you feel the regrets in relation to maybe any particular reasons or just general regrets for not having been able to win one of those big All Irelands?
I'm not sure it's a regret. It's definitely something that, what's the word for it? I don't know, it irks me, right? It gets to me. Do you know, it's But I don't regret it because I look back and I don't think personally there's anything that I would have done different or could have done different. A lot of it, like, you know, I kind of look back in pride at a lot of the matches. Like I think I performed pretty well, and you can only look at your own individual performance. You know, to regret something means you look back and you think, you know, I should have done something different. But I don't think I could have, but it's definitely something that, you know, it's not something I'm going to dwell on as I go on, but, you know, it kind of only hits you when you might see the replay on, there might be the, you know, an old Dublin and Mayo match on television, like, oh Jesus, you know, that one got away from us. Like, but it would have been lovely to win one. And to say that you kind of got to the pinnacle of your sport, and that's really all what it was all about. You wanted to be able to say that, look, we were the best team in the country in that year, and I was part of it. But it's not something that's going to stick with me every day of my life, but I sure wish I won one.
You mentioned there about some of your own good performances, iconic performances, I might add, particularly, you know, those two scores against Tyrone where you showed your attacking ability, the dispossessions, I think, was at Dublin in 17. How do you look back at those? How do you grade those performances? Or in general, how did you grade your performance in a lot of those games?
I guess I was quite hard on myself in a lot of the games, and I generally came away from them, you know, even 2017, you know, I played well, and maybe did a lot of stuff that would have been picked up on the media, like turnovers. You know, it's everyone kind of, you know, you salivate at them and they get the highlights, or the scorers get the highlights. But, you know, there were some games whereby I mightn't have been seen at all, but I was even happier with my performance because my man didn't touch the ball. And I felt as a defender that was kind of a better performance for me, and I kind of knew in my head. But I generally, like, I'd be quite critical. Like, I'd always know, not critical in a bad way, like I didn't come off beating myself up, but I'd always know if there was a mistake I made, or if, you know, say the 2017 final, like Dean Rock scored 3 points in the second half, and, you know, two of them I was probably at fault for. You know, I kind of, and that sticks out in my mind. And that kind of generally was the way that kind of throughout my career, I always kind of, I wouldn't beat myself up over it, but I always knew where I kind of made a mistake in the match. And I kind of took that with me a lot of the time and learned and kind of evolved from it. But it is funny, but particularly as a defender, that, you know, you might think some days you have a great match and it doesn't get picked up maybe in the media for having played well. But when you do the flashy stuff, it always does get picked up. But and it's nice. Look, it's nice. Those days are nice as well when they fall in your lap. But I look back in, you know, with pride on a lot of the performances. Some not so good. Thankfully, they're not as many maybe in my head. Like, I remember Cork in 2014. I got hiked off after 50 minutes. I got ran around by Brian Hurley. That was probably one of my worst days in a Mayo jersey. That wasn't a good memory. And there was one or two others maybe, but mostly look back with relative degree of pride and happiness that I kind of performed on most of the big days, I think.
No, I definitely think that's the case. We'll all vouch for that. So just looking back at being in a squad, many of the important things are the friends you make or even just the bond that's created in the squad. How do you feel, did the group get stronger through maybe adversity, whether it be losing those games, whether it be issues with management, issues with county board, pressure from the outside, maybe people saying that some players were gone above their station. How do you think the group reacted to that? Or did you as a group have to address any of those issues collectively?
I think we addressed them. It was rare you'd have a full group address where you'd have kind of a, you know, 30 players kind of without your management meeting up to discuss a particular issue. But I think that there was a natural, I guess, bonding because you were so successful, you know, I think. And, you know, I think whether you get to an All-Ireland final, and this is without having won one, so I don't know what the opposite is, but, you know, you still, like, we had some great days after those finals, you know, because you know, it was all over you. You went and you went home and you had your few drinks and you hung out with the lads and you just kind of debriefed on it. So, you know, whether you win or lose those, you're still going to have those days, and they're still days that'll stick out in your mind as, you know, where you could actually, as I said, sit down with your teammates and have a good chat about whatever it might be. And I think because we were so successful for so many years, it did strengthen the bond, definitely. And, you know, it was from Connacht final wins or, you know, big nights out in Crow Park on we'll say Bank Holiday weekend in August or whatever it might be, like, those are really good times, and you kind of bonded as a team because you got those to those days, and there was always a kind of a buzz after it. And you know, whereas if you were getting knocked out in kind of championships, and you know that was it, you might not have built that bond within the team, and that was there for 10 years. So I guess you're building lasting relationships, and it's always good when you're winning.
James Horan, I've heard it mentioned before that it's the setup is player driven, and based on what you've said to us here about the squad and setting the standards for the young players coming in and developing that culture. Do you think it's something that managers, when they're going even at club level, yeah, they have to get that buy-in? The players as a group have to be invested in it and feel like their views are getting considered, not always agreed with, but getting considered when you're setting out as a team what you're trying to achieve and what you're trying to do on the field.
I'm not sure I would say that our views are overly considered, to be honest. I think if you're like, as a manager going in, I think you have to have a clear idea as to what you want to do. And if you're willing to at least listen to the views that are coming on board, and if you want to say, well, I've taken what you've given to me, but I disagree, and we're doing this because of, you know, because I think that's the way we should do it, then that in itself gives, you know, confidence to the players. Like, and if you can do that, and you can articulate it, and you can demonstrate how that works, then I think that's what you need to do as a manager. And it's, you know, it's like anything else in life. If your manager and your management team is committed and they're driven, and you know the players can see that, then they'll very much row in behind. I think that's between club scenes or with county scenes. I think that's generally how I would see it. That if the guys that are leading the ship are dedicated and they're completely committed to it, you know, they might make wrong decisions, but generally they kind of can get everyone rowing in behind them.
Before you finished with Belmullet, you won an intermediate title. That must mean a lot to you, considering how, you know, look, I know how hard it is to be travelling up and down, particularly maybe after an inter-county season when you're already maybe carrying a few knocks and just looking forward to getting a break, and you got your reward at the end. I know it meant a lot to me as a Belmullet supporter, being at the game and seeing you do it. It must have meant a lot, because I suppose I still played with a lot of those lads, particularly the older fellas, yourself included. It must have meant a lot to you.
Oh, it was huge. It was huge. And just, you know, leaving Belmullet in a place where you're at senior, like, which I think we, you know, I mean, you and I were on teams for, you know, those semi-finals there for years in a row, and you just had, sometimes you just had to get the final and you're up to senior. But it meant a huge amount to the town. And I think it'll, in future, hopefully it'd mean a huge amount to Belmullet football, because I think once you're at that high level, it kind of breeds success. You know, the guys, it's like we talk about the dedication and the good dressing rooms. I think if there's, you know, there's Damian Mulligan there, and there's a real good, it's a really good attitude around the place. So I think it can only be good for Belmullet football. And I think, you know, if it was intermediate for another couple of years, you don't know what that could have done. You know, they might stay intermediate or they might go down to junior, whereas I think bringing it up to the senior level, you know, the younger guys are coming in, they know what it takes, or they'll be soon told what it takes to actually play at senior level. So from that point of view, it was to win it, first of all, as a kind of, from a personal point of view, and from, you know, playing with my brother, hugely enjoyable and kind of a proud moment, but also for the town as itself, and for the club itself to be up at senior status. It's nice to be able to leave it, knowing that they're at that level, rather than maybe finishing up my playing career with Belmullet, having felt that they were still an intermediate and maybe there was something that I had left unfinished, or we had left unfinished as a group.
Yeah, I suppose, and you're planning to continue your career in Dublin. I know I was speaking to you a couple of months ago, and you were hemming and hawing about how you're feeling about your club career. How any decisions, or what's the plan for the future of the next couple of years? Because there's bound to be plenty of good years left in you just for yourself.
Yeah, I would hope to play this year. I guess that's the plan. The plan is to play football this year whenever that happens. But, and I've kind of been open with the guys in Clontarf about this as well. It's very much if it works with family life and work at this stage, like, that's kind of where I've got to. And that was the reason for leaving Mayo, and it's kind of what'll drive my decision over the next couple of years. Like, I would love to play, but only if I can give it enough commitment whereby, you know, I'm doing right by Clontarf, and also if I can give enough commitment so that I guess I can perform to how I want to perform. So, you know, if I can train and play matches, and I'm, you know, out there getting ran around by Dublin footballers, I won't be very happy. And so I mightn't, it might be the best thing for me. So, yeah, we'll see. I'll just, it's kind of on a case by case basis. We'll see how the year goes. But it will be, you know, I am planning to, if I can at all, I guess. But as I said, there's other priorities that have taken place over the last couple of years. So we'll see.
You're fairly self-critical, and maybe we'll finish on this question. And you've adapted and learned. You've proven that throughout your career that you've been able to improve as a player and learn as you go along. Looking back at your career as a whole, particularly your intercounty career for Mayo, if there's anything you know now that you would have put into practice earlier in your career, is there anything there that comes to mind instantly?
That's a good question. I think my early career was kind of a lot of injuries. I would have tried to maybe see if I could do anything about that. I'm not sure. I was kind of constantly trying to, you know, those four or five knee surgeries there a few years in a row after one another. So that kind of curtailed a lot of what I was doing on the pitch. So, you know, I didn't have maybe 4 or 5 years at start there where I might not have been getting on the team because I was doing something wrong. I think a lot of it was because of the injuries. So that was kind of the main thing. But if I was to look back, I think maybe, I don't know, Bill, that's a good question. I'll have to come back to you on it. I think the outlook on football maybe towards the latter end of my career in terms of enjoying it. And it's not all about just the, you know, it's not all about the winning. It's like, it really is. A lot of it is about, and this is easy to say again, because there's no All Ireland and you can say that now. It's not all about the winning, but like there's huge enjoyment in just playing the matches, like whether it be, you know, a kind of championship match in a Pat McHale Park or the day out in Cove Park. Like as you get older, you kind of get thankful for those opportunities. And, you know, being in the bus driving into Cove Park with all the Dublin supporters shouting at you, like it's a huge buzz. And maybe when you're younger, you're kind of just thinking about, you know, winning and maybe the night out afterwards or whatever it might be. But, you know, enjoying those moments as they come to you, it might be something for younger players that, you know, you're in a hugely unique situation and a fortunate situation and enjoy them as they come.
So when Mayo line out against Down in a couple of weeks, you're no regrets?
No regrets. No, I didn't really play too much league anyway over the last year. So I think the regrets will probably come when, you know, when they're playing a couple of miles down from me here in Clontarf in Croke Park. I think that's definitely, I'm sure that they're with. I don't think it'll be, again, it won't be regrets. There'll be a little pit in my stomach maybe thinking, you know, I could be there. Might bring my boots down outside the stadium to see if you know, Lee or Oisin or someone gets injured and wait for the call. But I'm happy with the decision. It's definitely a different stage in life. It's nice just to be able to, that your own time is your own again. Like there's no, you know, you don't have to be someplace at a certain time. And so, yeah.
Chris, thanks very much. Really appreciate it from all of us here at the Mayo News Football Podcast. We really enjoyed that. Thanks for giving us your time. We are looking forward to seeing Mayo play in the next couple of weeks. We're disappointed that you won't be involved, but we wish you the very best of luck in your retirement. And we will be back with a podcast in the week coming up to the Down National League game. Thanks very much, Chris.
No problem, Billy. Good to talk to you. Bye-bye.